From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. For many people who identify as part of the LGBTQ plus community, there's a struggle between two aspects of their lives: who they are in terms of sexual orientation or gender identity, and their religious faith as Christians. Often, this conversation focuses on the intersection of legal and moral questions, such as marriage equality. But for those in the transgender community, there can also be a struggle just to be accepted in a Christian church. Many denominations openly reject the idea of gender transitions, like the Catholic Church and some parts of the Baptist Church. That especially came into focus last week when the Vatican released a declaration saying sex change, quote, risks threatening the unique dignity the person has received from the moment of conception. There are many transgender Catholics who've pushed back against that document and expressed disappointment with the church's actions. But there are still branches of Christianity that welcome and accept members of the LGBTQ community and can be overlooked in coverage of this issue. Today we're going to spend our program revisiting a conversation we had in December about how trans identity and Christianity intersect. Our entire program is on tape today, so we're not taking calls live, but we always welcome your thoughts, so you can email us, talk@21stshow.org, talk@21stshow.org. Joining us for this conversation is Harrison Price. He's a transgender man, a grad student at the University of Illinois, and a Catholic. Harrison, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
The second member of our panel is the pastor of St. Peter's United Church of Christ in Murfreesboro in southern Illinois, the Reverend Lauren Lambert Goheen. Reverend Lauren, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And finally, we're joined by the Reverend M.E. Eccles, who serves as the priest at St. Martin's Episcopal Church in Des Plaines, Illinois. He's also the first openly trans member elected to the Episcopal Church's Executive Council. M.E., welcome to the 21st Show to you as well.
Thank you.
All right, Harrison, I want to begin with you. You identify as a Catholic, but you are currently attending services at a UCC church, United Church of Christ. Why is that?
So as a Catholic, I grew up in a very Catholic community and went to a Catholic school. So it was a big part of my life growing up. And I really felt a strong connection to my faith there. But as I was growing up and coming into my identity, especially my sexual orientation and gender identity, I started to feel really isolated from my community and seeing how a lot of the beautiful things in faith practice turned out to be very negative in the social aspect. But at the UCC church that I attend, they're both very active in their faith, which is important to me, but also very active socially, standing up for transgender people. And it's really important to me to go to a place that supports both very openly.
Reverend Lauren, you know, we hear a phrase out there, religious trauma. It gets used in these conversations. Can you explain to us what that means?
My understanding and my experience of working with people who struggle with religious trauma is somewhat similar to what Harrison is describing, that they have been injured truly by practice in a particular faith community, that they haven't been accepted and affirmed for who they are as a beloved child of God. In my experience in pastoring at St. Peter's, there are those who have stepped away from active faith practice as a result of that pain and that injury. And then when they do find, I would call, a twinkling light of hope in a community, they find that God is open and affirming. God is available with grace and mercy and love for all of God's creation. They have the opportunity to come back and begin that path of healing, immersed in hospitality and generosity.
Emmy, how do you help people who have felt not welcome by churches in the past, or maybe people who've been dealing with religious trauma because of who they are? How do you make them begin to feel welcome?
I would say that we do our best, first of all, to acknowledge that the trauma happened, and that it's real. It's not a figment of imagination. It is just as painful as a physical trauma. And next, I think the Episcopal Church in general tries to do things both in the social justice realm, as well as individual congregations, and not all Episcopal churches are the same, but by making sure that people in leadership are representative of all of God's children, be they queer, bi, trans, whatever, that we work hard to make sure that all God's children feel welcome. And we leave space for the hurt and the time that it can take for a person to begin to trust again.
Harrison, I wonder if what we've been talking about, this idea of religious trauma, does that resonate with you? And maybe you can talk about what helped you on your journey in trying to deal with that.
Yeah, it definitely does resonate. And I really appreciate what everyone's been saying about how you have to leave space for the hurt and also reaffirm that like we are beloved children of God. And that has helped me tremendously, I think, just reconnecting with my faith, but also feeling like me being transgender is not at odds with me being Christian, and just having space and building a community that loves me for who I am and also encourages me just in my everyday life and says, you know, you're not an awful person for being transgender. I had someone tell me that I'm just participating in the act of creation, which I think was probably one of the most meaningful things to me, like hearing that. So just those good messages.
A biblical perspective on it. Reverend Lauren, did I hear you saying or sort of grunting a nod of agreement there with that concept? Or maybe you can weigh in on that.
I think the idea of participating in creation is beautiful. I believe that each one of us are constantly evolving. We evolve body, mind, and spirit. We have interactions that change our perspective, change how we understand ourselves in the world. And so to recognize a trans person's evolution, to lift it up and hold it up as a part of God's good work in this world. I love that message has been conveyed.
Tana is calling from rural Menard County on line 4. Tana, it's been a while. Thanks for calling in.
Hi there. I usually say what I'm about to say with humor, and I find myself crying this morning. I'm not personally gender-wise a member of this community, but I am because we have relatives that are. And I tell people there are 5 hills I'm going to die on. I've been a Christian. It'll be December 17th, 51 years ago, I was baptized. And by a Chicago Bear, by the way, Bill Oakes. What a guy. He was all about love, and he even at that time back in the 70s, 70s, 80s, part of the 90s, you know, he worked with a young man whose gender was, I think he was gay, I'm not sure. You know, back then you were either gay or lesbian pretty much. But anyway, so what I say to people is, pretty much what Christ said. In the Bible, somebody asked him, what's the most important commandment? And he said, to love God, the one and only God of all creation. And he comes to us in 3 ways, by the way, like water does. Three life-saving ways. The second commandment is to love others. And usually when I say this to somebody, I say, Lord, what were you thinking? I've got to love this person who hates me. I've got to love this person who doesn't care about me. I've got to, and I've got to love all these people who don't think like me. I've got to love all these people who don't look like me. I've got to love all these people, you know, you get the idea. And the next thing, these are the five hills I'm going to die on. So the next one is don't judge or condemn. The next one is forgive. Lord, again, what were you thinking? And the fifth one is treat others the way you want to be treated. And I do not think anything in the Bible supersedes the direct words from God out of his mouth, because Jesus is God. And when he was on earth, he said, love others. And nowhere do I see him saying, well, these are the others you're supposed to love, and then there's a list in the Bible, and those are the ones you're okay to. So I don't call God loving me, calling me to hate. And I don't call God loving, don't hear God calling me to dislike.
Yeah.
I call God calling me, I hear God calling me to treat everyone with his love, his unconditional love and acceptance.
Tana, you mentioned you were baptized in Chicago.
No, I was baptized in Springfield.
You were in Springfield, okay, but you're in rural Menard County.
Do you, Baptist Church, and my husband and Bill Oaks were good friends back when their families lived in Canton. So
I guess my question is, do you see the golden rule, as you're describing it, being applied to people who are LGBTQ in your, you know, in the faith communities you see around you now?
I haven't used that phrase for so long. Is that the one about treat others the way you want to be treated?
Yes.
Yeah. I hope nobody I know is listening. Well, I hope they are, because I want everybody to know how I feel. Especially, yeah. And then it's heartbreaking to think there are so many children who are feeling so alone in the world. Because people don't treat, you know, kids are bad enough anyway, but boy, the bullying today, especially with social media, I don't know why we couldn't all be like those mothers in Texas and not have phones available to children until they're at least in eighth grade. But anyway,
all right, Tana,
so that's it.
Thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it. And M.E. Eccles, I want to bring you back into the conversation, priest at St. Martin's Episcopal Church in Des Plaines. You want to talk about some of the theology we heard there and how that relates to our conversation today?
Absolutely. I think Tana's spot on in her theology. And yes, there are definitively what are called clobber passages that are often their scripture weaponized to use against LGBTQ folk and women.
Leviticus, Old Testament sort of things you're referring to.
Yeah. And some New Testament, some from the letters of Paul. But my answer to all of those is what she said. Jesus never said anything against any type of person, regardless of who they were. And so that's the theology that I live by, you know, that love God and love others as yourself.
Sorry to interrupt. How do you approach people when you do hear people using those passages? You know, how do you deal with that?
Well, I try to get a feel of where they're coming from and why they might be using those, quoting scripture that way. Are they quoting it out of fear or anger, or do they just need to have somebody say, okay, I hear you, and I don't agree with you? Or are they really interested in having a conversation? If they're interested in having a conversation, then I move to the place of, have you just memorized these that you've heard in church or heard somewhere, or have you actually done the reading of these various passages? Do you know the context of these various passages? And and if they've read them themselves, if they haven't read them themselves, I suggest that they do that. if they have read them themselves, then I'm, you know, I love having a conversation about what they think the context is, and I speak what I believe I learned in seminary and following about the historical context of various passages, and also hold up the mirror of, well, you can't necessarily pick and choose scripture. There's a lot of other things in Leviticus that we no longer follow as Christians.
Yes, do not eat of the ibex. It is unclean for you. There's always one that jumps
like that,
to my
for
mind.
Sure.
Yes.
And for sure how women were treated then and versus now. And so I just think it's
all right,
important
to
see where that the person who is speaking is coming from.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We're listening to a conversation we originally broadcast in December last year about the intersection of trans identity and Christian identity and the ways people struggle with that, especially when their own denomination rejects, in one sense or another, who they are. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening back to a conversation we had on the program in December about the conflict some people experience between their religious faith as Christians and their sexual orientation or gender identity, wherever it is they fit in on the LGBTQ plus spectrum. We spoke about this with the Reverend Lauren Lambert Goheen, who's pastor of St. Peter's United Church of Christ in Murfreesboro in Southern Illinois. Also, Harrison Price, a transgender man, a grad student at the University of Illinois, and a Catholic, and the Reverend M.E. Eccles, who serves as the priest of St. Martin's Episcopal Church in Des Plaines, Illinois, and is also the first openly trans member elected to the Episcopal Church's Executive Council. I should note, as this conversation was broadcast in December, that was obviously before the Vatican's proclamation last week, which denounced gender theory and gender-affirming surgery, among other things. That message has gotten some pushback, and these are conversations we'll continue to have on our show. As for today, the entire program's on tape, so we're not taking calls live, but we do always appreciate hearing what you have to say about what we've been talking about. So you can email us. The address is talk@21stshow.org. talk@21stshow.org. I want to share a text message we got from Jerry in Urbana. It said, my husband and I have attended the Unitarian Universalist Church since 1996, find it to be a wonderful, supportive community. Christians are certainly welcome, but they might find a more comfortable environment for their religious views at another church. Unitarian Universalists are supportive of all faith traditions, as well as atheists and agnostics. Harrison, I want to ask you, the Pope recently made proclamations about potentially allowing trans Catholics to be baptized or serve as godparents. I wonder how much of an effect you think this will actually have on trans congregants.
I think the interesting thing about that is that, if you're not Catholic, you may not be super familiar with the fact that Catholics are baptized at very soon after their birth, like at least within 6 months to a year. So to me, it doesn't make much of a difference for the transgender community that has already been raised Catholic, because we're not getting rebaptized. And if we were, I know some Christian churches like rebaptize you, or they do like a name blessing if you do change your name, but that's not what the Pope is talking about. It doesn't really mean too much to us. And if you are transgender and you're converting to Catholicism, it feels a bit hurtful to have to be given an extra set of permission, you know, to be baptized, that people who are not transgender don't have to do. They're just accepted. But to say, you know, well, I guess you can be baptized even though you are transgender, it feels like you're already participating in a religion that's exclusionary, and you are the exception to the exclusion.
You know, Harrison, you've spoken before about how your relationship with faith has changed over time, right? Raised Catholic, rejecting faith at one point, and now returning to it. I wonder if you can talk about what drove you to give religion another chance in life when, you know, this denomination you were raised with rejected who you are?
Religion was a huge part of my life growing up, and my relationship with my faith and with God was very meaningful to me. So it was honestly a little hurtful when I was rejecting it, you know, like it is what I needed at the time. But, you know, looking back on it, and I had some other things happening in my life that just really felt like I needed support, and that I could not only work out without faith, but also wanted to with faith, that it was really time to reconnect with that and try to mend that relationship, especially because I had come out and I was comfortable with myself, and I was, you know, already dealing with the trauma. I felt like it was a good time to do something that was so important to me.
So, Reverend Lauren, I want to bring you back into the conversation. Now, some UCC congregations, including your own, use the label open and affirming. I guess that's in contrast to some of the churches we've been talking about. What exactly does that phrase mean in this context, open and affirming?
Sure, and I appreciate that question, that the United Church of Christ as a denomination is open and affirming, and then each of our congregations, though, are autonomous, and so they can choose for themselves whether or not they want to be expressly open and affirming. So open would be welcome, you know, welcoming of anyone who chose to attend, expressing generosity to those who choose to attend. Affirming, though, is this hospitality that we've talked a bit about, you know, this affirmation of this is who you are, accepting of who you are. All sacraments are open to you, including the sacrament of marriage. You know, so in an open and affirming context, then someone who is interested in being married can come in and anticipate that pastor of that United Church of Christ is going to respond with all of the same practices and all of the same procedures that would be true for anyone else. In our congregation, one of the things that's meaningful for those of the rainbow is to make sure that there is a rainbow presence in the congregation. So literally behind the pulpit, the question mark, which for our denomination speaks to the idea embedded within us that God is still speaking, that rainbow is a part of that that symbol and that comma just behind the pulpit, so that anyone entering that worship space is aware that hopefully, you know, visually they can identify who we are even before we speak. Open and affirming means we are welcoming, and it also means with affirming that whoever you are and whatever your needs may be, that we're going to be met to the best of our ability with God's grace and assistance, that no one is turned away.
A lot of UCC churches in Central and Southern Illinois are located in rural areas, though, that tend to be more conservative politically, socially. Are there instances where becoming or sort of affirming, open and affirming identity of a congregation has led to blowback, either from inside or outside the church?
I think that's been true. Certainly, I realize that there's contrast with conservative and progressive across the state. Down south tends to be largely more conservative in some views, particularly it's at least my experience when it comes to religious tradition and practice. Our particular congregation was open and affirming by vote of the congregation for 5 years before they were willing to put something on the sign out front that let anyone know who might be passing by that that's who we were. And there was concern, you know, what type of blowback could there be from the community once they found out more of who we were. And one of the things that's been beautiful, as recently as 2 weeks ago, sitting down after worship at lunch in a restaurant in Carbondale, actually met someone, introduced themselves to me. He said, I haven't stopped in for worship yet, but what I'm seeing on the sign makes a difference in how I understand your congregation and my interest in attending. So something as small as making sure that the progressive flag is a part of our sign on the sidewalk, viewable for anyone who's passing by. It seems to be a beacon. It seems to let people know more clearly, in addition to what we put out on our website, so that people understand when they're looking for a congregation that might be open and affirming. We try to communicate as best as we can that generosity and hospitality.
We asked our texting group about this topic of LGBTQ plus inclusivity in churches across Illinois. We got at least one voicemail about this. Let's take a listen to that.
Hi, this is Tom from Springfield. And I would have to say here in this city, it's mixed between accepting and not accepting. There is an actual coalition of churches here in the city that are supportive, that are open and affirming. But it was also formed in reaction to anti-LGBTQ actions and statements from other local churches. And most churches in this city don't really put anything out one way or another. So it depends on who you're with and where you are, but it's very mixed.
Tom, thank you for that. We appreciate your message. Emmy, you've been serving your congregation for about 15 years, but you only came out and transitioned recently. How did your congregation take the news? And were you worried about their reactions?
Oh, yes, I was very worried. I've actually been here for 10 years. And in 2017, after doing a lot of my own work and work with my spouse, it became abundantly clear that I really needed a transition. And in the Episcopal Church, the priest serves at the pleasure of the congregation. And so if there's ever an issue, the congregation goes to the bishop. So the Friday before the Sunday I was going to come out, I called my bishop and said, so I'm going to be doing this thing. And he was wonderful. He said, I support you individually, personally, and I'd be happy to stand with you in front of your congregation. So that definitely made me feel good going into the experience, which was set in the National Trans Prayer Weekend of 2017. So I was doing a teaching on the Episcopal Church and trans issues, and then backtracked it to, you know, breaking down what does it mean to be trans. Ultimately, toward the end, I came out to the congregation through what's called, it's evolved now, but it was called the genderbread person. I asked them to put me on various lines around sexuality, identity, expression, etc. And once they'd done all that, I said, so that makes me what? And my millennial said, trans male, to which one of my 94-year-olds said, well, duh. I was floored. And the congregation was wonderful. No one left. They were supportive. We were playful around learning pronouns because I didn't change my name. I've been going by Emmy for a long time. And I was very, very blessed. That isn't the case, worldwide in the Episcopal Church, but I've had an amazing, amazing experience.
Harrison, some Catholic people have broken away from their established churches and dioceses and formed what they call inclusive Catholic communities. And in these, women can serve as priests, LGBTQ plus congregants are welcomed. I wonder if something like that would be enough to make you feel comfortable returning to specifically a Catholic or one of these, I guess, self-identified Catholic spaces.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely would. And I think having these spaces is, you know, good for anyone maybe like in my particular situation where you want to, you know, be in a space where you're practicing Catholicism with other Catholics because, you know, it's familiar to you or it's what you are most connected to in your faith practices. And I definitely think it's a wonderful thing to have these and to show that, you know, even though on documentation or high up in the church, people may not be inclusive, but there are inclusive people and there are inclusive practitioners.
Yeah. And I guess that's something that's interesting. And I myself was raised in the Catholic faith. But, you know, you have there's the idea of your relationship with Jesus, but there's also this institution and this hierarchy that flows from the Vatican through archdiocese and diocese. And I guess, Harrison, I wonder is the sort of, maybe, and maybe it's not from what you're saying, the sort of imprimatur, I guess literally in this case, of the church hierarchy on inclusivity. How does that factor into, you know, how important it would be for you to sort of feel like you were more connected with your Catholic identity again?
Yeah, I think understanding for me, like understanding and being in a community that reaffirms that the hierarchy is not the most important thing about faith would be like the most meaningful because, you know, like you said, there's the Vatican and there's a lot of people, you know, above just the diocese or your specific parish priest who do make a lot of decisions about how people practice their faith or their recommendations for how people should practice their faith. But if I'm in a space where there is a hierarchy where the priest and the officials of maybe the diocese or the archdiocese, if they're all open and affirming, that's very important because from the get-go, I'm not worried that, you know, the next piece of church legislation is the one that's going to, you know, make me leave again. They're going to be there.
And just about a minute before we need to take a break, but Emmy, did I hear you sort of making an affirming grunt there as yeah. Harrison was speaking? Yeah. Go ahead.
For sure. Long ago, one of my mentors said, never forget that the church is a human institution and that while God will never let you down, sometimes the church will. And as painful as that can be, we need to be mindful of that and mindful of whether it's safest to leave or to stay and either way to work for change.
Yeah. And again, briefly, we just about a minute now until the break, but Emmy, you're a member of this Episcopal Executive Council, right? Cultural yes. attitudes on trans rights have been evolving quickly in our society, but institutions don't often move as fast. I wonder, you know, what effect it has on trans people of faith when this change is so slow going. I gave you a deep question right before the break. That's not fair. Let's take the break. We will continue listening back to the conversation we first had in December about the Christian faith and trans identity. My guests for this conversation were the Reverend Emmy Eccles, the Reverend Lauren Lambert Goheen, and Harrison Price. More to come. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. For the entire program today, we're revisiting a conversation we first broadcast in December about the intersection of the Christian faith and trans identity. Some denominations are not welcoming of people who are trans. Others are and have become what, in some cases, are known as open and affirming congregations. My guests for this conversation were the Reverend Lauren Lambert Goheen, who's pastor of St. Peter's United Church of Christ in Murfreesboro in southern Illinois. Also Harrison Price, a grad student at the University of Illinois, a transgender man, and a Catholic. At least he identifies as one, though at the time we talked, he was not attending a Catholic congregation. And finally, the Reverend Emmy Eccles, who serves as the priest at St. Martin's Episcopal Church in Des Plaines, Illinois, and is also the first openly trans member elected to the Episcopal Church's Executive Council. As a reminder, because the program's on tape today, we are not taking calls live, but we always want to hear from you, so you can call anytime to our voicemail line at 217-300-2121. Let us know what you thought. Leave a message. We may air it on a future program. 217-300-2121. Emmy, before the break, I want to ask, because you are a member, I mentioned this Executive Council, and cultural attitudes on trans rights, they've been evolving quickly in our society, and sometimes institutions move more slowly than that. And I wonder if you can talk about that relationship and what effect that has on trans people of faith when the institutions are slower to catch up to where they are and really where a lot of aspects of our society are.
It is true, but the Episcopal Church is, I think, blessed in that they've been addressing trans issues from the very, you know, just basic of everyone is a child of God through non-discrimination and hate crime laws all the way back to 2009. You can is as far back as I have gone as far as legislation as part of our general convention. And General Convention meets every 3 years, elects a presiding bishop every 9 years, and the Executive Council is the convention between the convention. But our presiding bishop, Michael Curry, and both our past president of the House of Deputies, Gay Clark Jennings, and our current president of the House of Deputies, Julia Ilea Harris, have spoken out very publicly about their support of trans rights. And I think, in fact, I spoke before today about how our presiding bishop and President Jennings signed on to the amicus brief in 2017 that was in support of Gavin Grimm. it's important to both of them. It's important to love everyone and support everyone in being who they are, living into them, their full selves. And so because we do have, I believe, such a strong, supportive groundwork in our legislation, I think it has set us up pretty well to keep steady heads and weather this really difficult time of other legislation around us kind of flying around, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Earlier in the conversation, we talked about religious trauma experienced by a lot of people in the LGBTQ plus community and how those experiences, they've led a lot of people to reject their Christian faith. We got a text message from Marlene in Urbana that said, in this town, Champaign-Urbana, there are a couple of non-denominational options for the LGBT community that are very welcoming, although I don't participate myself, because I still associate trauma with religion, being part of that community. I partially grew up in a Catholic convent boarding school, Marlene says, and that should explain why. Thank you for sharing that, Marlene. Harrison, I wonder how you approach conversations about faith with other people who are LGBTQ plus.
It tends not to be the first conversation that I have with people, and I also tend not to bring it up because trauma is such... It's such a real thing, and you know, my faith is important to me, but it doesn't mean that, you know, the Christian faith is important to everybody, and for just like something that has and continues to cause so much hurt to a lot of people. I think it's really important that you respect other people's boundaries. And, you know, if they don't want to talk about faith, then we don't talk about faith, because it has been so harmful to a lot of people. But, you know, if people are interested in talking about it, I definitely love speaking about it with people, because if there's someone who wants to reconnect with their faith, or they're just curious about a different opinion, and, you know, if they've been hurt by it and they're ready to talk about it and I'm ready to talk about it, then I think it's a really important conversation to have, to maybe show people that, you know, there are people who want to make like faith a very beautiful and safe thing.
Yeah. I wonder if anyone has ever put you on the defensive about your faith. Like, well, how can you still believe in that after, you know, what so many people have suffered in the community? And maybe that's too personal. I don't know.
It's not too personal for me. I think I've never had someone like get super angry or upset with me, but I've definitely had people say like, oh, you know, how, like why, you know, or
yeah,
like it just doesn't make sense. Thankfully, a lot of those conversations have gone really well, and it's more just out of a curiosity place. But, you know, that sort of sentiment I see like online a lot, or just like I hear other people talk about it, but thankfully I've never had like a super negative reaction. But, you know, if I did, you know, maybe that person just has experienced like stressful things related to faith, and, you know, that's okay. If they don't want to talk about it, then we don't have to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones. And Ken is calling from Rockford on line 4. Ken, thank you for calling in.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I want to thank you for having these guests on. First of all, I'm a retired Lutheran pastor, Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and we are Reconciled in Christ is our venue for being open and affirming. And I just wanted to give the bigger picture. We're an Episcopal priest. Well, actually, Phyllis Tickle has a book out called The Great Emergence. And every 500 years, the church goes through a major rummage sale. An Episcopal priest mentioned that. And we're in a major transition in the church every 500 years. And that rummage sale, we're seeing what we're going to keep and what we're going to kind of let go of or transform. And I appreciate these people being in the lead as in leaving their mark for the future of the church, and thank them for their courage and their commitment to this inclusivity, which is ultimately transformational and part of the biblical witness of justice. So I just want to share that, and we keep the bigger picture in mind. Things take a while, but we can leave our mark, move in a good direction.
Pastor, thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it.
You bet.
We're coming to the end of our time together, and M.E., I want to come back to you, because in the past several years, we've seen a rise in anti-LGBTQ plus legislation around the country, especially anti-trans. A lot of people have been relocating to places where they feel safer and more welcomed. How can people find Christian churches where they will be welcomed? How would you recommend people go about doing that?
Well, I think Pastor Lauren definitively put it out there that the open and affirming, each denomination seems to have its own version of open and affirming or reconciled in Christ, or I don't think the Episcopal Church has one like a tagline per se, but in the Episcopal Church in particular, I would say look for the optics. Spoke to my church leadership and encouraged putting the not just the pride flag on our sign, but the trans flag, because lots of places can put the pride flag up, and they fully believe that they're welcoming and often very much are to gays and lesbians, but they're not so familiar with or comfortable with or accepting of trans folks. So that's why it was important to me to have our to have the trans flag on our sign as a visible way for somebody within our tribe to know that trans folk are welcome here.
Reverend Lauren, do you want to weigh in on that point? You talked a little bit earlier about making those visible markers outside the church or inside, I guess, but outside as well.
I think there's a couple ways, and I do appreciate the echo that that trans flag needs to be prominent. I know that the progressive flag is the one that we've put out front. I also have a stole that I wear routinely in worship. And I had a person who was a new member last December, as she joined the congregation and worshiped with us as member, she asked for a picture with me wearing that particular stole because she has a trans grandchild and she wanted to make sure and show that person that she loves this representation of faith that's a part of her new community of faith. I think gaychurch.com, if you're doing a web search, is one way to look pretty quickly for who might be open and affirming. A drive through the neighborhood, ideally people who are open and affirming, as we've described, should have something out front publicly letting people know. The other thing that our congregation has done is wear shirts that have all of the colors and represent what we believe, which is all belong here, which is the phrase that recurs through our worship space at St. Peter's. And so to wear that out in community at different events so that people know, yes, we're together. This is who we are as a family of faith. And we don't back down from the challenge that is to be present and to walk alongside anyone and everyone as they present need. So I think wearing something as a community of faith out and when we do community service, having something publicly on our buildings and our signage, and then being very clear in our online presence who we are and what we believe.
Harrison, just a couple of minutes left in our time together. Is there anything that gives you hope as you look to the future in the church's evolution on these issues?
I think people just stating their minds about the issue really gives me hope, and the open and affirmingness that the churches show. Like, I think having trans people and cisgender people both talking about how trans people do belong in Christian spaces and they are loved and they are accepted is really hopeful. And, you know, also people talking on the other end and speaking up about their experiences and how they've left the church, regardless of if they're returning or if, you know, they're done with it. I think hearing people really talk about those issues and the hurt that they've caused really affirms the need for all people and congregations to be open and affirming for people who are looking to come back.
Harrison Price, Reverend Emmy Eccles, and Reverend Lauren Lambert-Goheen, thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was our conversation on trans identity and Christianity, which we originally had on the program in December of last year. That's all the time we have for today. Coming up on tomorrow's program, Illinois government is aiming for what it calls functional zero homelessness. We'll talk about what that means, the ways in which people still experience homelessness now, and why this problem seems to be so intractable in our society. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Today's conversation was also co-produced by Owen Henderson. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.